Yeah, last week we had a guest speaker, Bill Uni, was here, and just wanted to say thank you so much for welcoming him and his wife Beth. And today I'm going to be continuing on in my message series, a series I've called To the Church, and we are going through the first letter in Timothy, and we've been in this for a little while, and we really have only a few, I would say, there's a few Sundays left, but we're getting down there, and normally I've taken kind of the small chunks of Scripture and gone through them. Today's a little different, that I'm going to be working through a bigger chunk of Scripture, and it'll seem like the first part is kind of like its own little message, and then a bigger part is kind of a different direction there. But we'll work with it today. But so far we've looked at a number of different things, and we are going to start addressing a little different theme here in the next few messages, and we'll be looking at relationships. And I'll be looking at 1 Timothy 5, 1 through 16 today. But we'll be looking at relationships with each other and kind of how the church relates with widows. And so those are some of the things that we will be looking at today. Before I get started, though, I was reading a commentary, and it was an introduction to this kind of section that we're about to start here on this relationships, and it was interesting how the commentator began his introduction. He stated that kind of that an age-old saying that many of you know: you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your relatives. Often that means that we have the ability to choose who we want to hang around with and associate with, and as with friendships, and we choose those who we want to influence us or speak into our lives. Whereas family, we don't get that choice. For me, I'm privileged that I really have a good family, a good extended family. But I know not all families are like that. And you might have a family, people in your family that you don't necessarily care to be around, but because they're family, you endure it for a little while, right? I hate to say this, but it's somewhat similar and true when we look at God's family. He has drawn together people from different backgrounds, from different cultures, from different personalities, from different temperaments, and we need to learn to live together. This is something that I think our church here does well. It is something I feel that our church has been very proactive in, and we enjoy being around each other. Maybe for some it's harder than others, but I have to say that that's a strength that we have here, and we need to keep working on that relationship with each other as a whole. We are a family, and we need each other, and we need to do our part in building relationships with each other, and that's my challenge. Each and every one of you, keep working on it. Keep building those relationships with each other. And sometimes, we see new people come, and that's a part of it is we see new people, and how do we get these new people in our church connected in? And that's by building relationships. And so each of us has a part in that. But I haven't even got to my passage yet today. Let's go ahead and read the first two verses, 1 Timothy 5, 1 through 2. 1 Timothy 5, 1 through 2. Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers. older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters, with absolute purity. Now, Paul is speaking to Timothy on how he is to address and speak to these four groups. Older men, younger men, older women, younger women, which really kind of covers, I guess, all the possible relationships. So let's look at the first. The first is older men. And there is an element of honor and respect in that culture. And there is an element of honor and respect on how Timothy is to speak to these older men. Even if he is supposed to bring correction in the form of a verbal rebuke, he is not to do so harshly. Why? Because in the family of God, we are to treat our older or elder men as if they were our fathers. Why are you laughing, Cal? Even if they don't act. Never mind. But what gets me, and when we get to this verse, it doesn't say not to bring rebuke, but instead it is to be brought in a loving manner and not harshly. There was a tremendous respect in that culture, respect for not only older men, but also older women. And Timothy was dealing with, if you recall, Timothy's dealing with a church in Ephesus that had problems, a lot of problems. And correction would likely need to be given in each of these groups. But to bring correction in such a loving manner that relationships would be preserved to the best that they can be. I would have to believe that for some people, any form of rebuke would cause them to leave. I'm sure that happened at that time, as it happens today, as painful as that might be. And that's not God's desire, but Timothy is not to shy away from bringing rebuke. It's the manner in which it's done. As for an older man, there should be a loving approach, as if he were your father. And that leads to kind of the others. How should we treat younger men? Well, they are like they should be treated like they were brothers. An older woman, like your mother. This doesn't have to be with rebukes, but treating them in general. And I think the important part is with this is, do we talk to our mothers the same as everyone else? Well, oftentimes, usually not. And I think that with both fathers and mothers, there is a lot more care involved in our conversations, especially if there's some sort of conflict involved. Why? Because we cherish our parents. We love them, we respect them, we honor them. When I talk to my mother, that there's just a really close relationship there. And I realize that that might not be for all people and their parents, but this is what Paul is getting at. The importance of how we treat each other in church is important because they truly are a part of our family in the Lord. And the best way to express that is by looking at our own families and our own relationships and our families. How would I treat my younger sister? I was thinking I might have answered that a little differently when I was younger. And that wasn't the correct answer. But how would I treat my younger sister? I would be careful. I would be protective. And we need to be careful and protective of our relationships with each other. Even the difficult ones. Because let's be honest, there are some relationships that we have that are difficult, especially in church. But we need to be careful and protective of those relationships just the same. Because it's important to God, it's important to the church. If a broken relationship in the church doesn't hurt, then there is a problem. That's kind of an important phrase, so I'm going to repeat that. If there is a broken relationship in the church and it doesn't hurt, there was a significant problem. There was no relationship, and we haven't done our part. This is Paul telling Timothy how to treat people in the church, and I cannot help but insert a verse that comes later in the second letter of Timothy. So I'm going to just read 2 Timothy 2:24 through 26. And the Lord's servant must not quarrel. Instead, he must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Those who oppose him, he must gently instruct, in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth, and that they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil, who has taken them captive to do his will. Now, this might be applicable to leaders. It's kind of written to Timothy as a leader, and we as leaders should be looking at this. But I truly believe, shouldn't we all aspire to be less quarrelsome, to be kind to everyone, not being resentful, and even in the face of opposition, still be gentle? And I know this is hard stuff, and as a pastor, I've made mistakes, and I hope to learn from them. I hope to grow from them. But these are things that we need to be looking at and be reminded of. Now, I've got a lot to go through here in 1 Timothy 5, so I'm going to keep going here, kind of moving into our next little section as it pertains to the church's relationship with widows. So 1 Timothy 5:3-8 is where I'll be reading next. Give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents. For this is pleasing to God. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and to ask God for help. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. Give the people these instructions too, so that no one may be open to blame. If anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So taking care of widows was an important aspect of the early church. It was something that the early church really clung on to. You see, there wasn't social security. There weren't retirement or pension plans. There wasn't other government programs. You kind of have to put yourself in that time and place. And first, people didn't exactly live as long as we do today, especially in the ancient Roman Empire. One source said, people were considered old if they were in their 40s. See, I told you I'm old. I'm getting there. But for whatever reason, men often were the ones to die early, so it was usually widows who were left. Verse 3, Paul clearly says to give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. The culture, again, was one of honor and shame, and to be a widow was a difficult position to be in. And if the widow was not wealthy and really needed that help, there was an element of shame that she would have felt. So what Paul is saying is moves against that cultural norm. For the widow in need, he's saying, elevate them. Honor them. Give them honor. Honor the women who are struggling. Yeah, what does it look like to honor and elevate them? It included providing for their needs. Yet Paul has to bring some clarification. What is a widow in need? A widow with children and grandchildren should be honored by her own family first. They honor her by taking care of her in her older age. It's interesting how Paul words that verse 4. Her children and grandchildren should put their religion into practice by caring for their own family. Countless places we are told to care for one another. It is one thing to say it. It is another thing to do it. Put it into practice, especially with your own family. But I think it's more too. Looking at one of the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20:12, which I don't think I have in here. Actually, I do. Exodus 20:12, honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. There's that word again, honor. To honor your aging widowed mother is to take care of her. And for those of us with aging parents, it isn't always easy or convenient to take care of them. Certainly if they live a distance away, but we are to repay what was given us. The fact is, my parents took care of me when I was an infant. They changed my diapers, they clothed me, they made sure I had everything I needed, they gave me a roof over my head, they loved me, they took care of me. Actually, I enjoyed it so much it took me 23 years to move out of their home. But they did that for me. And so on the other end, as they get older and they start to need that care, I can show them that same love in a time that they need by caring for them. So that's where Paul is getting at. So a widow with children and grandchildren, they should be taken care of first by their family and shouldn't be a burden on the church when they have family to care for them. The woman in need looks to God for help. Verse 5 says, the widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and to ask God for help. She's left alone, either no children or has children who are not Christians or who have abandoned her. This widow trusts God that she is one who has put all her hope in God and has that godly character. There's a prayerful devotion that is seen by others as she prays night and day. And this might also mean that this godly widow has nothing and all she can do is pray that God will provide. This godly character in the widow is in need. It is contrasted by the next verse that shows an ungodly character as that widow chases after her desires and pleasures. She fulfills her selfishness. And Paul states, though this widow may be physically alive, she's dead. That first widow has the hope in God. The second widow doesn't live for God, but lives for pleasure, which leads to death. And Paul has more to say, but he seems to revisit that family taking care of their own again in verse 7. Give the people these instructions too, so that no one may be open to blame. If anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Wow. Do you read that? Paul really gets to the heart of family members not taking care of their own. It seems like there probably was an issue at that time of people not wanting to take care of their family. And Paul's writing in such a way to get their attention. And I realize that the church struggled to take care of the widows in need. And it appears there were many widows receiving support that should have been supported by their own family. Paul's making it clear, if If you see your immediate relatives in need, yet turn your back on them and refuse, it's tantamount to denying your faith. You know, when I read that and I start to think, but I have questions though. What if this widow is or the mother, a relative, what if she's a selfish unbeliever? What if my help in the past has resulted in enabling destructive behaviors? What if my family is just using me and has no desire to grow in their faith or to better their situation? Those are some of the questions that come through my mind. Do we just turn a blind eye and provide? I would say absolutely not. I think we have to look at these with wisdom, a true need, and help that brings honor to those who are honorable. You have to look at this within the context of what Paul is writing. He is saying who the church should invest resources to help and who the church should not have to. And we would be wise if we look to God for His wisdom if we encounter those difficult instances. And Paul has more to say on who is in need and who isn't when it comes to widows. So let's keep reading in verses 9 through 10. No widow may be put on the list of widows unless she is over 60, has been faithful to her husband, and is well known for her good deeds, such as bringing up children, showing hospitality, washing the feet of saints, helping those in trouble, and devoting herself to all kinds of good deeds. Seems like this poor widow has to do a lot to get help from the church. And I don't think that that's Paul's intention. But his intention is to try and help the church understand how they are to disperse their resources. How are they to give to those in need, who are really in need? And I would say it would be no different from today. I think those are some similar questions we have today. You know, is this person really in need? If we as a church help this person, are we just enabling further destructive behavior? I think these are all questions that many of us struggle with. And I would say oftentimes it's better to err on being too generous than not enough. But then we get to this passage and we see put on the list of widows. Evidently there was a list of widows receiving financial or other forms of support. And I will state that Paul was saying that honor should be given to widows, even if they, you know, all widows should be honored. But if they're in need, they would go on this list. And I found this a little funny. Just a few minutes ago, I said a person was considered old in their 40s, but they wouldn't be eligible for church support unless they were in their 60s. I thought that was just a little comical myself. Why in their 40s would they not be able to? I suppose because they could still work, maybe support themselves, maybe remarry. The next requirement after age was character again, faithful to her husband. And I'll tell you, for those of you that have been in this series for a while with me, realize that that is the same statement that we saw when it came to the elders and deacons that was translated husband of one wife. This could easily be read, no widow may be put on the list of widows unless she's over 60, has been the wife of one husband. That Greek phrase is the same, it's just the gender was changed. Again, I don't believe it has to do with number, but about faithfulness in the marriage. This is someone who was faithful. But it's interesting that the NIV will use one translation a couple chapters earlier than a different one here. The widow is a one-man woman. faithful in her marriage. She's also well known for her Christian works. The fruit of her faith is good deeds. Again, it's looking at, you know, is this person really of faith? Can this person be a widower, a man? And I believe a widower could be on the list, but it just was more rare. And they just often died earlier. What about the younger widows? What does Paul have to say about them? We get that into our next section here in 11 through 16. For any younger widows, do not put them on such a list. For when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. Thus they bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. And not only do they become idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not to. So I counsel younger widows to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. Some have, in fact, already turned away to follow Satan. If any woman who is a believer has widows in her family, she should help them and not let the church be burdened with them, so that the church can help those widows who are really in need. Wow. That first part there, I'm thinking, ooh, be careful, Paul. Careful with your words. Be careful with your possible accusations that you're making. And I realize Paul is speaking from some sort of experience there, and you need to see this as maybe the worst case possible. And he's giving direction to the young widows. First of all, if they were really young, they would probably have returned to their families, returned to being under their father if he was still alive. But as I go through this, I will say this is a hard passage to understand. This is a hard passage because on the one hand, it appears that Paul at the beginning is condemning widows for wanting to remarry. And let's go back. And bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. It looks like he's condemning them for wanting to get remarried. But on the other hand, he then goes and tells them they should get remarried. Well, what is it? I can tell you that it's a hard passage. But Paul is not giving a theological view on remarriage. It is really about whether or not to financially support this group of widows, the young widows. And yet it is hard looking at this and seeing that Paul makes it sound like a young widow, though it's not her fault that her husband died and now she's a widow, but he paints it as almost there's a sinful aspect there. Could a widow who is given financial support be tempted to live a sinful lifestyle? Sure. But you could be married and still do that too. I think any one of us could get into a habit of being idle, of going from place to place and not being a help, of speaking negative things about people, that's gossip. To be busybodies and making work for others and making trouble for others. Those can happen with anyone, widow, widower, married, single, it doesn't matter. And I really cannot tell you exactly why Paul was writing what he did, but there had to have been an issue that likely brought about shame and sin that was there. Verse 15 states that some have already strayed from Satan. Or strayed after Satan. Some may have chased after unbelievers who led them away, or because of life's circumstances, maybe even the death of their husband may have led them to turn away from Christ. Again, it's not super clear, and Paul simply counsels young widows to remarry and carry on with life. Carry on. Again, marriage isn't the answer to all things, but marriage is a gift to be enjoyed for those who wish and desire it. Other areas, Paul says, singleness is a blessing too. So yes, marriage is a gift, but Paul will tell us in other places, singleness is also a blessing. Yet the context of this passage isn't really about remarrying or staying single as a widow or a widower. It's really about should the church take care of those who may find themselves as widows. And the church should take care of those who are really in need. Maybe we are not biological family, but there are times that we can step up and say, I'm going to be there for this person. I'm going to be there for that person. You know, that's something I have seen in this church. Now, some of our elderly have passed away, but I've seen where people have just kind of adopted them and said, I'm going to be there. If they have a need, I'm going to help. Maybe their kids live a distance away or just don't seem to be involved. I love when I see that. Maybe it's cleaning a house, bringing food, running for groceries. Yes, we have a food pantry, but how can we individually move to help those who are in need? And that need may not be in finances or food or shelter. It might be just relationships, some of our shut-ins. They're craving interaction with people. Maybe that's how we can support some of them. Hey, let's just meet, have a time of conversation, play a game, any number of things. And it doesn't have to be widows. It's, again, people that are in need. As a family of God, how can we move? How can we be more of a family for each other? How can we be more of a family? And there's a number of things that I love about this church again. Maybe it's a football game or basketball game or something like that. It's like you'll see a group of church people coming together. Some of them don't even have kids or grandkids, but they're there because they're supporting them. Thursday night game night. You know, there's a fellowship night here that people are just coming together because they want to build more relationships. We have friendships outside of church. And oftentimes you'll hear me say, yeah, the service is over, but church continues in fellowship. Why do I say that? Because I want you to stick around and have conversations with each other and build those relationships. Because if we're a family, how do we do that? If we show up for an hour and 15 minute service, show up late, leave early, what do we get? You might get a word, but if we're not applying it, if we're not being the church, then it's just simply attending. But relationships is a huge part of what church is. So how can we do more of that? How can we build more of that? How can we care for each other? You see, it's in those conversations that we learn, hey, so-and-so, you know, they need help. Or, you know, someone's in need of something. It's by interacting that we find out, hey, there's a need. Hey, I can help with that. And I'm sure we're going to have some work days in the future here next door so we can build relationships while cutting up trees and, you know, enjoying time together. Even with our building project over here with the elevator, there's a couple of days that they're just work days. But when you have a bunch of people together, it's fun. I've already mentioned this once, but a couple of ladies came and painted, and all I could hear was giggling and laughing. And you know what? That was so funny. It was funny because they were enjoying doing something I think is not fun. But again, it's caring for one another. It's enjoying each other, being together. So that's kind of my challenge today.